Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Just as last week, we have no guest this week. This is actually a continuation of last week's show. We asked our listeners to send in some questions for us, and you responded big time. Thank you. When we worked out answers to what was asked, skipping the ones we didn't want to deal with, of course, we found out we had plenty for two shows and maybe more. So here we go. The question
that, I just want to add, it's hard to find guests every week, and a lot of them are more difficult to find during the holidays. So there's that as well.
And partly it's our listeners' fault. When we've had shows in the past with just you and me, we've had positive response from our listeners. So so you get what you ask for, I guess.
All right. No accounting for taste.
So somebody asked, how did the radio show get started? Why did each of you end up deciding to do it? All right, let me go first. I've been teaching video poker for more than 20 years and teaching other things before that, including dancing, which led to my pseudonym. I enjoy the teaching process, and doing a radio show has a lot in common with teaching. I'd been a guest on several other radio shows through the years and thought I could host one myself if I had the right partner. My first co-host, Frank Nealon, he and I had very different visions about what the show should be about. We set it up originally as a six-month handshake agreement, and near the end of that 6 months, it was clear to both of us that the partnership wasn't made in heaven. Still, he created a brand new and very creative two-minute ending to every show. If you go back and listen to the ends of those shows with Frank, you'll be glad you did. My second co-host, Richard Munchkin, he didn't last too long either. At the time, he lived a couple hundred miles away in the northern part of Los Angeles County. And we both thought the shows would be better face-to-face rather than over the telephone. And he basically got tired of the commute. But at the same time, while he was here, he was able to attract a large number of really interesting guests. People like Don Johnson or Bob Nersessian or various other people that I would have no chance to get by myself. Plus, Richard always seemed to ask the perfect question. I was very sorry to see him quit the show. I kind of wonder whatever happened to him. My third co-host, Michael Shackelford, the Wizard of Odds, he's a mathematical kind of guy. He attracted a very different sort of guest than Richard and I could bring in. After a year or so, he decided the show was too much work for too little reward and asked me to find another co-host. One of the lasting residuals of Shaq's appearances here is that the participants in one of his bulletin boards, thewizardofvegas.com, often still listen to the show and actually provided more than half the questions used for these two episodes. By this time, Richard was moving to Las Vegas and was agreeable to resuming the partnership. Oh, happy day. On a week-to-week basis, Richard finds more of the guests than I do. I create the script, usually because when I ad-lib, I have too many pauses and hems and haws and that kind of thing. Richard ad-libs wonderfully and interestingly. Always trying to get him to tell some of his stories, and we're lucky today because he's going to do some of that.
I think I've told most of my stories already, but
then they can stop listening. If your regular listeners have no reason to listen to the rest of the show.
Well, and I'm old, so I forget that I told the same story already, so whatever.
I'm actually looking forward, because it's obvious it's a little bit different every time, and
Because I lie.
and I'm old and I forgot what it was last time. And finally, for me, the show has resurrected my public image, so to speak. Many you are aware of, and perhaps participated in all kinds of dancer bashings in the various internet forum over the years. I got accused of all sorts of stuff, often mixing 10% of truthful facts with 90% of not-so-true stuff. And it got repeated so many times that people just figured it must be true. Many of the people doing the cyber bashing didn't know me at all, but they had read other people bashing me and decided this is fun to join the party. At times, it got quite vitriolic, quite personal. I was not having a good time at all. After the show began, many people kind of got to know me because they heard my voice every week. I began to be seen as human, with strengths and weaknesses, to be sure, but human and not this big monster. The net result is that today I'm treated somewhat like an elder statesman in the gambling world. I'll take that. So that's how the show looked to me, Richard. How does it look to you?
You were pretty concise. I remember we had met a few times over the years from backgammon or whatever.
Yes.
But we were not friends, or I didn't really know you.
Yes.
A mutual friend of ours came to me and said, "Hey, Bob's looking for a co-host for this show, and I think you'd be really good for it." And I thought, yeah, you know, that sounds like fun. Why not?
Was that a backgammon player or a blackjack player?
I'm trying to figure out. Well, he was both.
Then I know who it is.
Yeah, right. And a chess player. He did say to me, "Now, I want to warn you ahead of time, Bob has a very bad reputation, but I don't believe any of it's true. You know, I've known him for quite a long time, and, you know, a lot of what's said about him is just a bunch of bullshit, you know." So I said, okay, and then, I had a good time doing the show in the beginning, but I was not having a good time driving back and forth from Los Angeles, and so I left, and then I came back, and yeah, so it's been good. I understand Shaq's feeling of it's a lot of work for not really any compensation. One of these days we'll figure out how to monetize the show.
You mean it can possibly get better than $100 a week?
right.
Maybe someday.
Yeah.
All right. Question to Richard. How did you get started playing blackjack? And also for Richard, now that you're banned from competing for the Growth Gene Cup, which is every year at the blackjack ball, did all that knowledge come just from years of experience or from somewhere else?
Okay, so you may have to remind me of the questions as we go along. But how did I get started in blackjack? I was a backgammon player in Chicago, and I would go to these weekly tournaments that were held at bars and restaurants and things. And I was playing backgammon for money. And one of the regular players was a dentist in Chicago. And he told me that he had just come back from Las Vegas, where he had made money playing blackjack because he had a system. And now I should say, had been fascinated with gambling from the time I was maybe 13 years old. I'd always been a games player. I got interested in gambling. I started reading books like Ed Silberstein's book on Playboy's Book of Gambling and John Scarney's Complete Guide to Gambling. So I was fascinated with gambling in general. And when he said he had a system for beating blackjack, I was like,
uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure you do. And he said, no, this is legitimate. He goes, you can actually have an advantage by keeping track of the cards played, and when there are more tens and aces, the player has an advantage. And he started describing it, and I thought, oh, well, this sounds plausible. This guy's not a meatball. I mean, maybe there is something to this. And I said, where did you learn about this? And he said, there's a book called Playing Blackjack as a Business by Lawrence Revere.
Yes.
And the library did not have it. My bookstore did not have it. I had to special order it. This is what we used to do in the old days, special order books. And, I got the book and...
Colorful charts,
great practice, little practice drills and all that. And I started practicing in my basement at night. I learned basic strategy cold. And I wasn't 21 yet. And so my gift to myself when I turned 21 was to one of these three nights and 4 days in fabulous Las Vegas, airfare included. And that, and so I got one of those package deals, and
I
flew
Vegas
out here.
World?
No, Vegas World wasn't here yet at that time. It was a casino called the Flamingo Capri, which was in between, basically where the Imperial Palace, well, it's now it's the Link. It was there. It was just, it was about like a Motel 6. When we got here, it turned out it had been overbooked, so they put me at the Showboat out on Boulder Highway. But because of that, I was able to rent a car, which they paid for, because I was supposed to be on the fabulous Las Vegas Strip, even though it was like a Motel 6. The Flamingo Capri had one blackjack table. Anyway, I had not yet learned how to count. I just knew basic strategy. And so I ran around for my three nights and 4 days and played basic strategy, and I won about $200. And I thought, man,
you're hooked.
Yeah, if I can win like this, just knowing basic strategy, think how much I'll be able to win when I, you know, actually can count cards. And then, you know, and then my plan was when I graduated from college, my plan was going to be to come out here to Las Vegas and make money playing backgammon and counting cards. And I thought, I didn't have much of a bankroll, so I thought I'll get a job as a dealer, and that'll be the perfect venue to practice counting cards, because I can practice for 8 hours a day while I'm dealing. And then pretty much that's what happened. I came out here, went to dealer school, I got a job dealing, learned to count cards, started making more money counting than I was dealing, and had to quit the job. So that was that. That's how I started. So then the question was about the blackjack ball. How did
On the Growth Gene Cup, you're forbidden to play anymore. Now, how did you get all that knowledge? Was it just experience or what?
You know, first of all, in the early days, so there's two parts of the competition. The first part is a series of questions, and a lot of it is just trivia. And I read a lot of stuff, a lot of all kinds of different stuff, but of course a lot of gambling stuff because I'm still fascinated with gambling. So, I don't know, my brain just retains a lot of trivia, and a lot of the questions are those kind of trivia-type questions. Then the second part of it was the skills competition. And the skills, in the early days, there was ridiculous stuff like, you know, putting and arm wrestling and throwing cards across a room into a hat and, you know, weird kinds of things like that. So I wasn't particularly good at a lot of that and actually ended up in second or third place quite a number of times before I actually had won three different times. I mean, I did win the second year. But then I was at the on the final table many times before I won again.
Some of those times, James Grossgene ended up being the winner.
Yeah, yeah. Although he came later, and he won, I don't know, 3 years in a row or something. It was ridiculous, you know, how quickly he won. But I will say, you know, he practiced, which was something I had never done. You know, he would actually practice for the competition before every year. And by that time, there were things that you knew that were going to be part of the competition, you know.
Such like, as cutting 22 cards out of a deck or something,
right.
Or
and,
some such.
Yeah. Or memorizing, you know, strings of cards and things like that. So, but anyway, the one thing I'm sad about is now that James and I aren't allowed to compete, the trophy got a hell of a lot better. The trophy is now this giant bottle of champagne that stands about 3 feet tall. And I would love to have had one of those.
Well, that was a one-off trophy. I mean, I think that was a Don Johnson comp last year. It's coming back.
Year, I think, so.
Well, good. I might compete. I hope I'm eligible. I did submit a number of questions to Max. I don't know if he's going to take any of those. Obviously, if he takes a lot of the questions, he's going to make me ineligible. Not that it matters. I have a decent shot at the trivia part of it, but when it comes to blackjack skills, I'm outclassed in that group. So, all right. There were... somebody asked, when I'm on a machine and I'm just getting killed, do I switch machines if I can? And my response is, assuming the machine is functioning well, not sticky buttons or anything like that, and it's just bad luck that's making my score go south, I stay. Assuming I don't run out of cash on hand or have marker money close by. I know who's the favorite, and I'm not too invested in today's score. If I didn't believe I was the favorite, I wouldn't be there in the first place. So, positive variance is more fun, but negative variance happens just as often. Somebody else asked, during the beginning of the Ken Adams podcast, there was mention of an article of a poker cheating device made in China and being used in local card rooms in Las Vegas. Somebody wants to know how to find that article.
I think the easiest way would be to look on the Gambling with an Edge Facebook page. Listeners of this show, if you're not already, I would suggest you follow that page or my Twitter, RWM21. I post articles pretty often that I think will be of interest to our listeners. And if I put it on Facebook, I also put it on Twitter. So, the easiest way I think would be to find it on the Facebook page and go back about 2 weeks or so, and you should see it.
Should you not want to do that, if you Google Fuller House Poker, that's F-U-L-L-E-R, you'll find an article by L.E. Bernstein. B-U-R-S-Z-T-E-I-N. It's not that hard to find. Okay.
But, you know, see, while I was touting the Facebook page and the Twitter, it is a good way to interact with us. So a lot of these questions we got from the Facebook page or Twitter or whatever. So we like hearing from you. We like getting your questions. So you might want to do that anyway.
All right. Somebody, now the guy who's submitted most of the questions, well, more questions than anybody else, a guy named Rooms, who was on the show not too long ago, we're answering most of your questions, Rooms. This means you owe us and you have to come back and do another show. You got that? All right. So, what he wanted us to do is he wanted me to talk about video poker machines that weren't quite right, and I played them anyway. And so,
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, let me give you my answer, and we'll see. The machine glitch, as it is, that I exploited most was at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas in late 2000 and early 2001. A few of their best video poker machines were awarding points at the slot machine level rather than the video poker machine level. My best guess is that this turned out to be worth $75,000 in cash to me and three automobiles. At the same casino, at the same time, the head of slot marketing was arithmetically challenged. If you took advantage of everything, it was way, way, way juicier than they thought it should have been. These were both parts of my $1 million in 6 months run I had back then. An example, I think they gave you one American Airlines mile for every 10 slot club points, or every $10 you put through the machine. And at the time, my wife and I were each putting in $1 million coin in a month, because of their other promotions. I am lifetime platinum at American Airlines, and I have never paid for a flight on American Airlines. I had never been on before that, and I'm Lifetime Platinum, which is, there were all kinds of other goodies that they just thought would be a good idea, and we said, yeah, that sounds great. Now, those things are discussed in depth in my Million Dollar Video Poker autobiography, and I've mentioned them on the show a few times, so I'm not going into great detail today. There are other casinos have much too generous promotions. One recently in my October 18th blog on the, you can find it on the gamblingwithanedge.com website or bobdancer.com. It told about a promotion at the Silverton was giving away 3% slot cash slot club on 8-5 bonus poker machine for 6 hours. Now, I have other stories I'm going to go into more detail about today, but first it's Richard's turn to tell us a good story.
Oh, that's just...
You got more of these coming, so...
Yeah, okay. Well, I thought it was going to be more specific than that, so...
It will be.
I would just say that the machines, the idea of a machine paying incorrectly is sort of the equivalent of dealers who deal the game incorrectly, which certainly happens. And so I have run into that where it's actually kind of great now where they'll have a pit with like 8 different carnival games and the dealer will come from one game and think they're still on that game and start paying you for things that have absolutely nothing to do with the game that you're actually playing. So I guess that's the table game equivalent of those kind of things. I guess a story about that would be the very first promotion that I participated in was there was a casino in Henderson called the Rainbow Club.
Yep. And next to the El Dorado.
Yes, next to the El Dorado. And they were having a promotion. I found out they were going to play 2-1 on blackjack.
Uh-huh.
So I called up my teammates. We were all living here in Las Vegas. This is about 1980 or something. And I said, hey, they're paying 2-1 on blackjack out at the Rainbow Club. You know, I'm headed out there. So I go out there and I sit down at the blackjack's table and I start playing away. And I hear all this screaming at the crap table. And I look over at the crap table and I see Stanford Wong and David Sklansky and about 6 or 8 other known card counters that I know, and they're all playing craps and having a great time.
You were on the wrong game.
And I said, I don't know what's going on the crap table, but if I'm going over there. And I think they were paying 3-2 on 11s. I mean, on the pass line. You bet on the pass line or the come. And then if 11 hit, you got paid 3-2. Something like that. And within an hour, the table was 4 or 5 deep. You know, people, everybody betting the table max, which I think was only $100. And about 6 o'clock, the casino called Uncle. Everybody stopped playing at once. And the line from the cashier's cage went all the way through the casino, and the casino didn't have enough money to pay everybody. And they basically told everybody, you'll have to take your chips home and come back tomorrow, and we'll be able to cash them tomorrow.
And they did.
And they did. Yeah, everybody did get paid. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun. And it was also, it kind of led to one of the very first big kind of blackjack parties. 4 of my teammates were all living together in one house, kind of out by Samstown. And at one point, I think Tommy Hylands was sleeping in the bathtub of that house because there wasn't a lot of furniture. So we just invited everybody to come back to the house. And so it was kind of the very first big blackjack party because all of the blackjack players really knew each other because it was such a small world back then. And even though we were all on different teams, So it was cool. It was a great time. It was
a precursor of sorts of the blackjack ball,
I guess.
All right.
I just would say, you know, we were all guys in our 20s, and we would have these parties, and we could just never get any women to come to these parties because it's all blackjack nerds who want to do nothing but talk about blackjack, and women just did not want to come. And then we institute these rules, like, okay, we're going to invite women to this party. There's no talking about casinos or blackjack allowed, and that would last about 30 seconds. And so, yeah, it was sad.
Well, that part sounds a whole lot like the blackjack ball. All right, on my turn for a story. About 20 years ago, when the Monte Carlo opened on the Las Vegas Strip, they had both $1 and $5 full-pay Deuces Wild machine. Now, these machines return 100.76% dollar machines. Before the slot club is $25 an hour, maybe. And they had a 0.67% slot club. $5 machines were quite a bit bigger than that. These games were hammered by the local pros for a week or so. And the slot director decided to remove all the $1 games because he figured local pros couldn't afford to play $5 single-line games. For me, that was close to being true at the time. But I did get 1 6-hour shift on the machine and managed to connect on 4 deuces twice in 6 hours. So at $5,000 for each set of deuces, this was a big payday for me at the time. That slot director got fired for some reason. Shortly afterwards, he began working in a downtown Las Vegas casino and decided that paying double on 4 deuces would really bring in the business.
Wow.
He was right. There was one $5 loose deuce machine where 4 deuces pay $12,500 on a game that was, I think it was a bad pay schedule, which meant only 99.2%. But an extra 4 deuces happened maybe every 4,000 hands, and getting an so that was hit a couple times before the casino called uncle, and the slot director was out on the street again. Shortly afterwards, the same guy was caught stealing from his boss at another place. Sure would be good for the player community if somebody hired him again, but as far as I know, that hasn't happened, at least not that I know about. Richard, your turn.
Oh, well, you know, the first thing that I thought of when you said when the Monte Carlo opened, this has nothing to do with Advantage Gambling, but I remember reading this story. I don't know for sure that it's true, but I just love the story that when the Riviera opened, which is,
yeah,
like, what, about 1960 or something like that?
Well, I would have guessed 5 years before that, but I'm not sure.
Okay, but anyway, when the Riviera opened, it apparently was a madhouse, right? Place was packed. Apparently, 3 or 4 guys walked in on opening day before they opened, wearing suits and ties, and just took up places in the pits and started watching games. And they, after the game started and all the customers were there and things were flying, they would just walk up to the cashier's cage with a fill slip and get fills for, you know, $10,000 or whatever. And on the way back to the pit, they would pass a woman with a purse and just dump the money into the purse and apparently took off quite a big score on the opening day of the Riviera. So I always thought that was a hilarious story.
Well, I don't know. Vegas was a mob town at that point.
Yeah, well, but these were probably half-assed wise guys anyway. I mean, but
yes.
Yeah, it certainly was a mob place back then. So, yeah.
And stealing, ripping off the mob is something I might be nervous about.
Yeah.
All right.
By the way, speaking of that, somebody wrote me an email within the last day or two that I believe it's Sugar House.
In Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia. There's some beef going on where they're not paying the taxes that they thought they were supposed to or something like that. I wish I had the details of this. But the idea is that basically the sheriff said, well, you guys are on your own. If you're not going to pay the taxes, we're not going to police the place. So the person was saying, you know, if you wanted to go take a shot, now would be the time to do it. But... yeah, not something I would do. Not suggesting anybody go break the law, but
huh? Well, this show is actually being delayed a week since we did it. As long as we were not advising anybody to do it, probably good thing it's
probably
delayed
too
a week.
Late anyway. Yeah, good.
All right, my turn for a story. Shortly after the Eastside Cannery opened, that's just south of Sam's Town, recently taken over by the Boyd Group, they decided to offer 10 times points because other casinos were doing it. At the Eastside Cannery, however, base points were worth 0.1667 rather than the typical 0.10 that Station Casinos and Boyd had their points. So 10 times points became worth 1.67. They had 9-6 jacks or better machine, 99.54, up to one machine for $2 10 play. That's $100 a hand. And these machines were locked up at least 6 hours before the promo started. By the time I got there, the best I could get was $10 8-5 bonus poker machine. This is a 99.2 game, but when you add 1.67 slot club, it's juicy enough. Often I could get two machines because these are $50 a hand machined, and a lot of the players didn't have the bankroll for that. Unfortunately, these machines yield W2Gs every 400 hands or so, all four of a kinds, along with straight flushes and the royal. So the slot staff was running around like crazy because the whole place was jumping, and it was understaffed because the slot director didn't really know that this promotion was going to be such a hit. So I started tipping much more than usual. So the most typical jackpot is $1,250. That's the normal four of a kind on fives through kings on that game. But I was tipping $10 to $20 on this. Which is way more than I would typically tip, but I did get serviced right away. And so that's what I ended up doing. I earned a ton of free play that day. I don't remember for sure how much. Maybe it was in the $10,000 to $15,000 range, something like that. Before I left that day, I was able to collect $3,000 of it. Soon the limit was $50 a day. This is a real pain. It was about a 15-minute drive from my house, and I could download money from both my card and my wife's card, but still, the casino day changed at midnight, so if I showed up at 11:45, I could download 2 days' worth on both cards, but still, it was going to take a long time to download this much free play. A few months, a new GM was installed, and shortly thereafter, he made it 500 a day, and it didn't take so long after that. I have another story about how 10 times points turned out to be more than the casino bargained for. But Richard, it's your turn again.
Oh, you know, the other big promotion, this one, a disaster, and a lot of people have heard about this story. Yeah, I got a call from a friend of mine who was living in Hawaii at the time, and he said, get out to Morongo. They're having a promotion on Friday the 13th.
Yes, I was there for that.
Yeah, and they're going to be paying, it was 3-2 on a total of 13 on the blackjack table, right? I think that was what it was going to pay. So, yeah, any total of 13, you would get paid 3-2. This was a massive edge for the player. Now, he had flown in from Hawaii 24 hours early and was already on the game. And he wanted me to come out 24 hours early and sit on the game for 24 hours before it started. And I wasn't willing to do that. I said, I'll be there tomorrow. You know, it was going to start at 5 o'clock, I think, on Friday the 13th. And so I went out the next day, and my partner Daryl was also out there, and you know, they had locked up seats. And I got there early enough in the afternoon that there were still seats, and so I got my seat at a table. And people just started showing up one after another, and every Advantage player I have ever met in my life was there. Yep. I mean, Stanford Wong, Arnold Snyder, Al Francesco, just, as I say, anybody you could possibly imagine that was an Advantage player was there. And there were people circling the tables, asking to buy seats from people. And you could watch, during the course of the day, you could watch the color draining from the faces of the pit bosses. They knew something was up, and they were not happy, and they actually looked scared. And, you know, fights were breaking out when someone went to the bathroom. I literally overheard a conversation. One of the pit bosses was on the phone in the pit. He hangs up the phone, and he turns to the other boss, and he says, that was someone on the phone who's flying in from New York, and he wants to know what is the closest airport for him to land at. And anyway, as
that
you
was
know...
that was a clue to the pit boss.
Yeah, that was a clue. As you know, the time came, and they called off the promotion. Now, I had been sitting there for 5 or 6 hours, and remember, at this time, this was Class 2 gaming, which means you had to pay 50 cents or a dollar a hand to play. And, you know, paying that for 5 or 6 hours, and, you know, my friend from Hawaii and Daryl had been there, Jesus, I don't know how many hours, you know, paying that. But, you know, they didn't refund any of that or anything. So, yeah, that was the first big disaster promotion where, it was a nightmare.
I remember Stanford Wong screaming at one of the casino shift boss, I guess, that this was immoral to cancel it and that people had come from all over. Of course, Stanford had published it on his casino news. What's the name of that one?
Current Blackjack News.
Current Blackjack News.
He used to have a monthly newsletter that Current Blackjack News.
This was a special edition because this was a special case, and so the word was out. All right. I want to talk about something that happened at Railroad Pass, of all places. This is a very old casino southeast of Vegas, about halfway between Henderson and Boulder City. At the time, I lived in Henderson, maybe 6-7 miles from the casino. They were mostly a quarter and dollar place, and they had dollar coin droppers, which means it would hold up to 400 coins, and if you got a $250 jackpot, then they start dropping, the coins would start dropping into the hopper. They had 9-5 triple bonus poker plus. This is a 99.8% game. And a 0.25 slot club, and occasional triple points. So it's not a great play. But I played it occasionally because my wife liked to get to-go food from that particular steakhouse. It was a surprisingly good steakhouse for a place that was that unprepossessing.
You know, it's funny how some little dumpy places have actually really good steakhouses. Yeah. Like Circus in Reno, I always thought had a good steakhouse.
Sometime along the way, they installed wheel poker machines. Now, this included 8-5 bonus, which is a 99.5% game. Now, wheel
8-5 bonus, 99.5?
On wheel poker.
Oh, on wheel poker. Okay.
Now, wheel poker is a 6-coin per line game. And every time you got a natural 4 of a kind, you get to spin a wheel. They had the 99.8% game, so they figured this is only 99.5, so we're safe. Except, it's a $30 per hand game. And so now triple points on a is a quarter percent advantages plus comps on a game that you can play $30,000 an hour through the machine easily. And so so I did. Every triple point day for a year or so, I was there playing it. I did make a mistake and get a Delt Royal for $20,000, and they took out the game. Go figure. So, but still, I had several thousand dollars worth of comps. So I would, I'd stop playing, but I would still go to the steakhouse and get four comp meals that they charge my account $50 each for and take them on home. Somewhere along the way, after I hadn't played there for about a year, I got a postcard in the mail that said on a particular day, it's going to be 10 times points. A regular 0.25 club, 10 times points is 2.5%. Now, the 8.5 bonus wheel poker had been downgraded to 7.5, but that's still 98.7. If you add 2.5% to that on a game you can play $30,000 an hour through the machine, that's pretty good. So use some money to get two room nights. So I was there at 11:45 feeding in money to two machines and basically played 10 hours and went up and napped for a while and came back, played another 10 hours. Ended up losing a few thousand, which was disappointing on such a juicy promotion. But I got an extra $6,000 or $7,000 in food comps. And so I used those. Eventually, all the food comps gone. But that was a really good play. They, I was the only player playing it. I have no idea how many others got this 10 times points. But none of the others either knew about...
probably not on the Railroad Pass mailing list.
Yeah. So anyway, that was pretty cool. Too bad I lost. Your turn again, Richard.
Oh, you know, the only story I remember about Railroad Pass is I had a friend who I used to be a dealer with, and he would go out and play, and he used to drink a lot. And I remember he was playing at Railroad Pass, and I think it was only a $50 max or something. But he got really drunk, and I don't know what he said to the dealer, but he said something that just set the dealer off, and the dealer just leaned across the table and cold-cocked him and knocked him right back off the chair. And
player down.
Player down, yeah. And he ended up suing and got like a $25,000 settlement or something, which was the first time I had ever heard of anybody actually getting money for suing a casino. Back then, you know, attorneys didn't want to sue casinos, so... you know, that's my Railroad Pass story, although that reminds me of another story that I have to tell that's not an advantage play, but another one of my friends who was a good friend of this guy who used to go out and they liked to drink together, and they could really drink, these two guys, and so this guy, we used to call him Bad Boy, he went to... what is now, I think, called the Wild West. At that time, it was called the King 8. And it's that little casino.
Tropicana and Industrial, which
yeah,
is now called
right.
Tropicana and Dean Martin.
Right, right. At that time, it was called the King 8.
Yes, it is.
And they had four deck games, and they would cut about 26 cards. And he could still count when he was drinking. And he went in there and... they started, he was drinking Grand Marnier, and I think it was Grand Marnier, but they were putting vodka in the Grand Marnier to get him drunk faster, because they knew that he would get really drunk. And he was aware that they were putting the vodka in there, but he wanted to get drunk anyway, so he was fine with that. Anyway, he played and had quite a number of these drinks, And he did finally lose all of his money. And he lost his last bet. He was standing at the table while playing. He lost his last bet. And he said, he looked at the boss and he said, "Well, thanks for the drinks, fellas." And he leaned over and barfed into the dealer's rack. Now, for a dealer, if somebody spills a drink into the rack, it's a nightmare, right? Because you have to take all the chips out and clean all the chips. And I just can't imagine what that must have been like for a guy to throw up into the chip rack. And they did evict him rather harshly when they, I mean, they literally threw him out into the parking lot. And he was 86th. He was permanently 86th from the King 8.
I bet. So, but now it's changed names. He's allowed to go back. Huh?
Yeah, right. There's I have no idea if he's even alive still.
There's new racks to barf in. Yeah. Okay. The next story comes from the late 90s. And my wife and I were scouting casinos in Vicksburg, Mississippi, which is on the Mississippi River, halfway down between Tunica and the Gulf Coast. So we had been there a couple times before, and there used to be a Harrah's casino there in kind of the bad part of town, relatively speaking. Harrah's sold out, and the new casino was called Horizon. And we got there at about 4 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon, and Horizon had just taken over, and there was flyers that every Wednesday during the month there were double royals, midnight to midnight. In round numbers, a double royal adds about 2% to the game. So we scouted the machines and trying to figure out what our best play was. And there was a 25-cent 100-play machine with both NSU deuces, 99.7, and 9-6 jacks, 99.5, on the games. Adding 2% of those on a $125 per hand game, pretty sweet, and we could get on it. Now, I had a few thousand on me, but at another casino in town, we had a line of credit of a joint line of credit for $20,000. So my wife at the time, Shirley, went to get the money while I sat down and started to play. I wasn't really sure of the strategy for the games with a 8,000 coin royal, but it didn't matter that much. It was if I turned it into a $190 an hour game instead of a $210, well, okay, I'll live with that. By the time Shirley got back, I'd hit a couple royals, and so I was ahead, and we never had to use the money that she went and got. The end of the play, we're up quite a bit. We had to get back to Vegas, so we couldn't stick around for the next Wednesday. The next Wednesday was they were going to do it again. And this was, you know, if you could be on for 24 hours, and with two of us, that would have been easy to manage. It was worth many, many, many thousands of dollars. And but we couldn't stay. We'd also been earning comps, so we had to go to the gift shop, which is the only place you spent comp. You could get rooms, which you didn't need, or food, which we didn't need. So at the end of it, to spend it, there was we ended up buying a couple cases of Carmex lip balm. It was like tubes that were selling for $2.50 each, which is about double price over the edge. But we had these things, and we had to spend them on something, because we weren't planning on being back for a long time. When we got home, there were some friends we owed a favor to. So we asked them if they could take a, if they were going to be busy the next week and could take a trip. And they could. So they ended up getting there and getting on the machine like at 4 o'clock in the afternoon before. And it turned out it was barely early enough. There were other players who knew about this. And so they played, one of them played NSU for 10 lines or something for until midnight, which is a really small loss. and then while the other one was resting, and then came and started hammering with their specially learned strategy for the 8,000 coin royal. Turned out they played for 8 hours and couldn't hit the royal. Going 8 hours on a 100 play machine without a royal,
that's pretty amazing.
It's unlikely. Yeah. But they managed it. 8 o'clock in the morning, the slot director came in and started screaming, "I told you the signs didn't go on these machines." And so ripped all the signs down, and that was the end of the promotion on those machines. Hmm. They were still there, and they were still eligible on other machines. The best game they could find was $5 single line, 9-6 jacks. So it was still a very decent play with a 8,000 coin royal, but they didn't hit on it. So it was impossible to lose on this promotion, and they did. They did not take it against me personally. But had I been able to go back the next week, I would have. But it was just, I think classes were going to start, and I just was not able to go back. Your turn, Richard. You got any Vicksburg stories?
Not Vicksburg, no. I do have a cautionary tale. So, California and Oklahoma, California had Class 2 gaming and still does, maybe, in some place. Yeah, in the card rooms and stuff. But before the Indian casinos were Class 3, they were Class 2, which meant that they had to be either player banked, or they have this system where the house banks the game, but the house is not allowed to make a profit from the gambling. They charge you a commission for each hand, and then the money, that's where the casino makes their money, and any money that is won from the play of the game, they give back in the form of some promotion.
Uh-huh.
They skim some part of it, but they give back some part of it. In some places, they just keep it all. I mean, but anyway, in California, before they had the they had this class too. So there was a casino in Fresno, Thunder Mountain, that they were, the way they would give back the money that they won in the gambling was they would have promotions, and they had, I think it was every Monday, 2-1 on blackjack. So
that was the Station Casino, wasn't it? Wasn't it run by Station?
No, that's Thunder Valley. I think this is called Thunder Mountain.
Uh-huh.
Wrong. So, Thunder. And this is before Stations.
Uh-huh.
This is before it was a regular casino. This is back when they charged the commission and then
okay.
had these promotions. So I went up and played this 2-1 on blackjack, $100 maximum, you know, for as many hours as in the day as it was going on. Three hands of $100, I lost $20,000 with 2-1 on blackjack. So, you know, that just realize people think, oh, 2-1 on blackjack, it's just, you're just going to print money. Not necessarily. That's still a pretty low edge as far as I'm concerned. So, I mean, it was a crappy 8-deck game with hit 17. So it wasn't the ideal 2-1 on blackjack. But still, to lose $20,000 betting three hands of 100 is a pretty bad beat.
Boy, have I got a better game than that to talk about. And this is one where I wasn't actually involved, but I heard about it. This was in the days before ticket in, ticket out happened. And all the machines, some you had bill acceptors, but when they paid out, they dump coins. And certainly would. So several casinos, including all Coast casinos and Station casinos, whenever you got a W2G, meaning at least $1,200 jackpot, when they paid you off, instead of making you play it off, they would reach into the hopper and feed the machine with 5 coins and for the next hand. And nobody objected to it because you got an extra 5 coins. And it didn't cost them very much because most of the games were for dollars or less. And dollars, you can hit, you know, $2,000 for 4 aces and a kicker in some games, or royals. But the first one happens every 16,000 hands, and the next one happens every 40,000 hands. And if you're only giving away $5 every that few hands, it doesn't cost much. Well, Sunset Station put in a $100 machine for $5. A five-coin $100 machine. And it was a crappy pay schedule, perhaps 8-5 jacks or better. But that part wasn't important. What was important is every time you got a three of a kind or higher, that was a hand pay. So three of a kind is worth $1,500 on that game. Except instead of paying you $1,500, they gave you $2,000 because they put in an extra five coins.
Wow.
This made a 97.3% game up to a measly 143% games.
Wow.
On a game that you're playing $500 a hand. Having a 43% version game. Now, you can't lose on this game, but the players did. They got in a total of nine hands and three W2Gs before the casino thought this probably wasn't a good idea. So they stopped giving you the extra five coins on this machine. And the players were welcome to continue playing a 97.3% game, but for some reason, they didn't want to. They ended up losing a couple thousand on a game you can't lose. Now, had I heard about it before the fact, I certainly would have been happy to pitch in my bankroll as part of it, but and I would have been one of the losers on a game you can't lose.
Yeah, well, if you're only going to get to play nine hands, you can lose at anything, right?
So. Yes. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In January, from Sundays through Wednesdays, 3 a.m. to 3 a.m., the $500 spin-to-win promotion is in effect. 500 points earned on a slot machine or 2,000 points earned on a video poker machine earns you one spin. You may spin up to four times a day. Spins are either free play, $10 to $100, or free play, 2,500 points through 100,000 points, which means $7.50 to $300 in value. All prizes are downloaded directly to your machine. You must play off the free play in 2 weeks or lose it. The promotion has run 4 days so far. Data from my spins and those of a few others gives a preliminary estimate of about $12 a spin on average. Most of your spins will be for 2,500 points, which means $7.50 in value, but you'll get the $25 and $50 spins and probably occasionally higher ones, although I haven't had any of those yet. And so currently the best guess on the average is $45 to $50 per day if you go in and play 8,000 points. This makes the promotion equivalent to triple points because you get your normal $24 in free play for that many points anyway. There will be a two times points Martin Luther King Day, Monday, January 16th, on all video poker games, midnight to midnight, no limits. If you play the spin to win on double point day, it turns into quadruple points for the first 8,000 coin in. If you play between midnight and 3 a.m. on Monday, January 16th, that counts as your play for Sunday, January 15th. So if you can function during those hours, that's better bang for your buck for the spin. The next 10-week semester of free video poker classes will begin Wednesday, January 25th at noon in the Silverado Lounge. First class will be Jacks or Better. The complete schedule of classes may be found on bobdancer.com. At videopoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get corrections on most of the game. Several of their games are gold members only. So you can practice more games with the gold membership than you can with a regular membership. The game of the week is 100 Play with Quick Quads. Quick Quads is a 6-coin per line game where you get paid for 4 of a kind or a quad every time you get a 3 of a kind and the other two cards add up to the rank of the trips, such as 8-8-8-5-3 or maybe deuce-deuce-deuce-ace-ace. By the way, the next semester of classes at the South Point, I'm going to be teaching double bonus Quick Quads for the first time ever. This is a 99.55% game, which is positive during double point days and during some promotions like spin to win. Okay. We have Anthony Curtis here with us today, and he's going to talk a little bit about the LVA Membership Rewards booklet that just came out. Anthony.
Hey, how you doing?
Good to have you here.
Well,
welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Again, thank you. Yeah, well, the first thing I wanted to say is thank you guys for making an announcement for us. We thought that we were going to be a little bit delayed in delivery on the member rewards book this year. We had a problem at the printer. So that was nice, and a lot of people did call in and say, okay, is it in or not? They came through, and we got it. So we've now gone, I don't know how many years in a row, where we've had it on the first new day of the new year. But it's out, and it's ready for 2017, and it's a beauty. It's as good as anything we've ever had. We have some new things, including a two-for-one at the Wicked Spoon Buffet at Cosmopolitan. Which is a big deal. I mean, that's that alone, I think, is a $45 ticket, and you can.
It's more than that.
Is it? Is it more than that now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Geez. Well, I mean, okay. So you can get LVA online. If you get an LVA online, is $37. So you can use that one coupon at the Wicked Spoon, and you know, there's your money back right there.
You were worried last year that, given the climate of how the casinos are tightening everything, that this year would not be as good as years past. How did that turn out?
I was really expecting it, and there's a lot of people out there that
expecting
that it would be lesser, and there are a lot of people out there that want it to be lesser so they can laugh at me, you know, because every year I go, it's better than before, and I thought because of the climate out there that we were going to have a real hard time, and I found it to be completely opposite. I will say right now that the book this year in value, in expected value, in the level of the offers is as good as ever, and probably better because of this Wicked Spoon offer. You know, the Cosmopolitan just doesn't work with anybody, hardly anybody, and they came in with this great offer for us. And I found that was the way it was down the line. I expected so much pushback from the casino industry because of the tightening and things that are being done, not in any response to things that I've written or said about it, but just because that's the mindset. It was the opposite. It was incredible. With a very, very few exceptions, I had people going, we want to do exactly the same thing. It's working for us. It's bringing in good customers. And that's what this program is supposed to do.
Now, I heard the Venetian was going to give a coupon that would lower their roulette from 000 down to 00.
Well, I learned about the 000 roulette being on this show. You told me about it. I didn't even know about it. And sure enough, I went and saw it. And yeah, they got the 000. No, the Venetian we haven't dealt with, because the Venetian is a sort of a tough group to get to the top in. And, you know, it's my fault. I haven't spent enough time trying to crack the Venetian code yet. So they didn't reject us or you know, go with us. But just about every other place in town has. I would say the only places we don't work with at all would be Wynn Encore and Venetian, both for the same reason. Neither one of them said, no, we don't want to work with LVA. I've just never taken the time to try to get through all of the doors that you've got to push through to do it. I will this year with their new website coming out and everything else. There'll be no stones unturned. But I was really gratified and excited and really surprised at how the casinos were not being chintzy and saying, yeah, we're going to give you a good offer because you've proven your customers are good customers for them, meaning they give action.
Right. So now most of our listeners, of course, want to know what's the cash, right?
Yeah, the cash came out. Now, this is the only one that went down a little bit. The expected value for gambling went down slightly, but that went down slightly because of only one thing. Last year we had an offer, a coupon that nobody else in the world had for a birthday bonus at the Plaza, and it was worth $90 for people of average age of about, say, in the 40s. It was worth about $90. They were giving you something like triple in free play and blah, blah, blah. So they stopped that whole program, so that's $90 taken out of the till. But other than that, everything else went up. The value, the EV, for a person who's listening to this show, who knows how to use all the gambling coupons, the EV is about $511. Now, you know, give or take a few pennies here and there. I didn't round everything off. But everyone who went and played this book, that's why for years we had lots of people going out and trying to counterfeit these books and all, because, or buy them, buy as many as they could, because they could buy it for 37 or 50 and get 500 or 600 bucks in expected value. The EV, it's tougher now because you have to go through the slot clubs. So you can't, unless you've got multiple IDs and things like that, technology has caught up to that sort of duplication and scamming along those levels. It's funny, I'm on that side of the coin now, right? I'm like, I don't like the scammers. You know, I've become the casino. You know, I've become my father, my mother, I've become the casino. But, you know, I obviously I want to protect our program, and I don't want to see that kind of scamming. But anyone who buys this and knows how to use everyone, 511 is the optimal value of this. what we call AI, which stands for any idiot, meaning somebody who just hears about it and says, I'm going to go play the coupons that don't take expertise. All right, so these are the match plays that you just set it down and play your hand. These are the free plays that, so you're going to give up an extra 10 cents in EV while you play it through if you don't know perfect strategy, whatever. The any idiot value of this book is $233. So you could literally hand it to your wife and say, play these 17 gambling coupons, and it'd be worth $233. And the free play alone would, all right, so no risk, just play the free play all around. This doesn't include any match play, only free play, $75. So the question is, why doesn't every single gambler in the world have a membership to LVA, right?
Right.
I mean, because, you know, there it is.
So about that, if a husband and wife had the same address and they each wanted to get an LVA book because...
It's fun.
Because they each want the $500.
Yeah, they can.
How does it work? What if they have, they want to get their dog one too, or their...
Well, you got to have a player's card,
our
right?
Our rule is two per household, and we are real stringent about that. And that's one of the reasons, again, why we get offers that others don't. You know, like people would say that our competition is the American Casino Guy, and it is to some degree. And I like Steve Borey a lot, but Steve Borey completely patterned his program after ours and, you know, made the American Casino Guy to be as much like LVA as he could. But he doesn't get what we get because he doesn't – his isn't as expensive. You know, our people are pre-qualified because ours cost more than to buy the book, and we police it really, really hard. So it's two per household, so husband and wives can do it. And you have to have your own player's card, so that's not a problem with the casinos. So it's one per person per year, two per household. And, you know, husbands and wives or boyfriends and girlfriends or boyfriends and boyfriends, for that matter, can do it.
But you can't get one yourself, your wife and your girlfriend. You can't do that.
Well, if your girlfriend lives in your house, well, maybe you're Mormon.
I'd have to make an exception if somebody was that good. You know, if they're all in the same household, all three, I'd have to make an exception in that case.
So next year on the Wicked Spoon coupon, half two for one, if you get it back, can you also try to get a parking pass while you have it?
I got a feeling parking passes are going to be in the mix going forward here, you know, for the next year. We're going to kind of see what happens.
By the way, speaking of what seems to be our favorite subject these days, I did see the head of Caesars on an interview saying that they were not going to charge for locals.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. So at least for now, the Caesars properties are not going to, and the Rio is not going to charge for parking at all. But that's what he said.
So. That's really interesting. When they first came out, that was not the stance. When they first came out, it was like it's going to be for everybody. There's going to be no exemption. I'll bet they went back and looked and said, "Holy mackerel! What a shot for us to grab local business versus this MGM. If MGM's charging and we're not, so yeah. That makes a ton of sense to me." By the way, Caesars was, you know, they were terrific in getting involved with things they gave us for the member rewards. Again, I thought Caesars is so monolithic. I thought Caesars seemed to be tightening up so much. I thought it would be very difficult, and Caesars was terrific, even to the point, you know, they don't give away like some of the locals places do, but discounts at the Bacchanal Buffet, you know, discounts at Spice Market Buffet, at you know, the cheapest that you can actually get it without, you know, getting some special deal or a comp. So hats off to Caesars. They did a great job. I'm behind them again.
Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the show.
All right. Another question. It's from a man who's in Southeast Asia, and he has a couple more weeks before he has to fly back. He's going to meet people at the Super Bowl. So he's a blackjack counter. He has a $25,000 bankroll. And no hole carding experience. Wants to know where in Asia he should go. What should he look for? Richard?
Oh, I thought his question was, should he come to Las Vegas now, or should he continue his travels around Asia and come closer to the Super Bowl? So, I mean, where should you go in Asia? I mean, things change all the time, so I have no idea where, you know, what you might find in Asia. But I would say, if your choice is between scouting places in Asia or coming to scout in Las Vegas, I would say definitely stay in Asia. You're much more likely to walk into some goldmine situation or or be able to play unmolested without getting barred. Vegas is one of the worst places in the world right now to be a card counter. They are just very heated up, and as soon as, you know, you get backed off, your flyer is going to go out with your picture on it, and you're going to have hassles all over town. So I would say definitely stay in Asia, look around, and maybe you'll find something really good there.
Okay, there was a question on our Gambling with an Edge website about a man who learned the Bobby Singer system for blackjack. Wants to know from Richard what he thinks of the Bobby Singer system.
Well, I'm not familiar with the Bobby Singer system. When people want to learn blackjack, you know, for 20 years, I always recommended Black Belt and Blackjack, Arnold Snyder's book. But also the Knockout Blackjack is a really, really good book for starting out. So I don't know Bobby Singer's method. I'm leery of a guy who has infomercials on TV, or he used to anyway. I don't know that he still, I don't think he still does. But I would say that. I would say check out Black Belt and Blackjack or Knockout Blackjack, and you'll be okay.
All right. Another listener wants to know if there's a good way to deposit lots of cash without getting banned by your bank.
Wow, that is an interesting question. I guess a lot of it depends on what is a lot cash. I mean, $50,000, you're probably okay. $500,000, you're probably not. Wow. You know, my thought would be to try to find a way to get a casino to write you a check. So
without giving them your name.
Well, no, I mean, it really does depend on how much cash we're talking about, but I would see if there was a way. For example, you could go into, let's say it was $100,000. You could go into a casino and put it up as front money. And they would take the cash. I mean, yeah, you're going to fill out a CTR. That's no problem. And, you know, give them some limited amount of play, very small amount of play if you want, and tell them, you know, make up a story. Oh, I got the stomach flu or whatever. And then instead of getting the cash back, ask them for a check. So that might be one way. One of the poker rooms might be another way. A poker player might be another way to get them to write you a check. The other way is, I think it's really a good idea to try to establish a relationship with your banker. I've done that. I've gone in and had meetings with the bank manager that I use. And I said, look, I'm in the gambling business and I deal in a lot of cash. I know you don't like getting these big deposits and things, but every once in a while, it's going to happen, you know, and they've been cool with it. Some banks are far worse than others. Chase is pretty bad with cash. Wells Fargo, I hear, is pretty bad with cash. I'm with Bank of America. They've been pretty good. But again, I've gone in and talked to the banker. So
for some reason, you don't look like a drug dealer or a rock musician. I'm not sure what they look like, but you don't.
Yeah, but the banks still don't like it. They don't care what you look like. They really would rather not have to deal with it. And mainly it's just because the government is putting so much heat on them.
All right. Another question. Will any of the current or former hosts write another book? Now, I can't speak for Frank Nealon or Michael Shackelford. I have no current projects writing. I actually am writing another novel. I don't know, although I got it almost done. I showed Richard a draft and he goes, bury this one, it sucks, which I was really disappointed that he said so. But I asked another friend whose opinion I valued and it was basically variation on the same answer. So that novel is buried. But Richard, do you have any?
You know, I would never say never, but first of all, I find it just laughable when people say, about some blackjack player or some gambler. Oh, well, they're just making all their money writing books. Books pay nothing. Nothing. I have made single bets for more money than all of the money I earned writing the book that I wrote. So I had all the material for a second book, and I didn't bother because it's just not worth it. It's way too much work. It's great having written a book, but writing a book is a real pain and an enormous amount of work. So the interviews that I have are, I just put them up for free. They're on gamblingwithanedge.com. If you go look under me and you look under interviews, you'll find those interviews that we're going to be for a book called Blackjack Wizards. And so, like I said, never say never, but I can't imagine actually writing another book.
Okay. We got one final question.
I will say at one point I did entertain writing another screenplay, but even that, they're, you know, it's like buying a lottery ticket.
One final question. It's for me, although Richard May has his 2 cents at the end of it. And the question was, it said, the edge for Advantage Play video poker is a fraction of what it was during my heyday. I know that mailers make up most of your edge at video poker, but how do you determine exactly what you have to play to receive the optimal amount of mailers? I've heard that if you stick to only the highest return video poker, your mailers will often be limited regardless of your coin in. Is Advantage Play VP all about trial and error? And if so, how do you determine your overall expected value? Well, that's a good question. And it's a tough one. Figuring out what your mailers will always be an inexact science, partly because the casinos are allowed to adjust their formulas at any time without warning or explanation. That said, several things can help you. First, talk to other players who play similar games that you play in the casino. Having a good network of fellow players is invaluable, and it's also worth cultivating. Some people do this instinctively. Richard's one of them. Others want to fly solo. I'm one of them. Or have no idea how to make friends with others. The best predictor of what a casino will do in the future is what it has done in the past. If it's a brand new casino with no relation to any existing casino, you are pretty much flying blind. The more experienced you are, however, the better educated guess you can make. Sometimes you're going to be wrong, but having a reasonable educated guess is better than no estimate at all. You want to keep really good records of how much you've played, how much you've won or lost, and how much you've received in benefits. At a minimum, those are going to be major input into whatever formula the casino uses. Talking to a casino host sometimes helps. Hosts are basically professional friends. Sometimes they'll tell you things such as how much theoretical you've earned today or what they think the marketing department is looking for. Sometimes these people do not know exactly why you're asking the questions or how valuable some of the answers are. If you play the loosest machines, several times a casino is going to give you a smaller mailer than if you played a tighter machine. Depending on how much smaller and how much tighter, it may or may not be a good idea to play the loosest machine. You're going to have to do the math to figure that out and get data from people who have done it one way and people who've done it the other way. Finally, if you've been running salty for a period of time, now is the time to go to host and ask for extra benefits. They look at your results, figure your results are typical for such a lousy player as you, and they're often willing to pay something to keep a losing player like you coming back. Often these extra benefits may be converted into cash. Now, if you've been running good recently, now is not the time to ask for more.
Yeah, I can't stress enough how important what in Survivor they call the social game is. So the larger your network of, I don't want to say friends, but I would say associates, people that you can trade information with, the more successful you will be. And you have to pick wisely, right? Some people are trustworthy and others are not. But if you can find other players who play what you're playing and trade information with them, that is only a benefit. I know there are a lot of people who think anything I tell you costs me money, and I am totally the opposite. I think the more I share with you, the more it's going to benefit me in the long run. So, you know, and the biggest predictor of how successful you are is, number one, how hard you're willing to work, but number two, to me, is how good your social game is, because the better it is, the better you're going to do. And you say you're bad at it, Bob, but you have a network of people that you talk to.
I do have a network, but I can very comfortably sit and play for 8 hours of video poker straight, and I know at least one co-host for this show who cannot possibly do that.
Well, I have to say, you know, I mean, you've been a great resource for me. It's great having, you know, one of the best video poker players alive, right, to go ask questions to. But in terms of the actual going out to play, when it comes to my son who I'm trying to help or whatever, really, you play, you're allowed to play in so few actual places, and your level of play is so much higher than what he can afford. That part of it really is, you can't be very helpful to him, and, well, and to me by extension, but
I recommend you send him and his girlfriend to my classes starting in a month.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
All right. So this is, we finished up all your questions, and it took 2 hours of showtime to do it. This was actually fun for me. We very well may do this again and put out to you, to our listeners, send us some more questions, and we'll do our best at answering them. Yep. Thank all of our listeners. Thank you very much, Richard, and go out and hit a raw flush, everybody.